This radio station is KPTZ. We are in Fort Townsend, 91.9 KPTZ.org. This program is Toss Salad. I'm Phil Andrus. We have a reunion, for me at least, Jim Pivarnik, whom I have not seen in a long time, Jim. And I will say welcome to you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good to be home.
Yeah. And from my right to my left to my right, and as far as what you see on the radio, I don't know, Liz Honig. Hello, Liz.
Hello.
That is your microphone over there.
You're hello.
I think share it just with yourself.
Okay.
It is Charlie Kaneski. Hello, Charlie.
Hello.
Scott Wilson, we're going to share that microphone.
Piece of cake.
Piece of cake, he says. Really? Huh. All right. Well, Scott Wilson is a rather veteran here. Scott, you haven't shaved lately. What's the deal? I see you with it. I bet you could have one whale of a beard.
Trying to catch up to you, Phil. You're my model on this.
Yeah, I have about a 50-year head start, Scott, I mean. We're going to talk about the Port of Fort Townsend. I've seen this before. 5 steps, 5 years. This has nothing to do with... maybe it has something to do with abuse in a way. I don't know. We'll find out soon enough. Jim Pivarnik is now... Jim, are you... the executive director, the interim executive director, the lifetime executive director? What is your actual title?
No. I'm the interim executive director.
Interim, of the Port of Fort Townsend.
Right.
Cool. Well, Jim used to be the assistant director.
Deputy director.
Deputy director until he left. And so the first part of this conversation will be mostly between Jim and me, because I want to catch up with the guy. And if the rest of you have something you want to add, your microphones all are on. Oh, by the way, anybody listening who has questions can write to me, and I will dial up my email address right here, and I can look at that at tossedsalad@kptz.org. Questions will be answered, assuming that I see them here, and the fact this is in the wrong, that would be looking at trash already. We're getting ahead of ourselves. Anyway, Jim, you are back again in town, as we know, and... for how long did you... you worked for the port a long time here, Port of Fort Townsend.
I was at Port of Fort Townsend for 15 years. Started as a property manager in 1999, I guess it was. And had an opportunity to leave and go to the beautiful Port of Kingston, which was heaven. It really was. It was a beautiful port to run. It was a beautiful community. And I had the last 2.5 years of my career there. When I was asked to possibly, do I want to come back to Port Townsend?
And you just said it was a beautiful job in a beautiful marina and a beautiful place.
But it's not home.
Okay, and that is the difference?
That is the difference.
Were you commuting from Port Townsend?
I was commuting from Port Townsend. Yeah, we never moved. We have a beautiful place out by the airport, and we built a custom home and my wife's horse farm. So it was not something I wanted to ask her to do, to leave that. So it's a 45-minute commute, so an hour and a half a day.
7 days, 5 days a week?
5 days a week, sometimes six. And so, that worked out really well. But it, like I said, it wasn't home. It would never be home. You know, we've lived here 20 years, and this is our home.
Retire here, I suppose, when you finally do?
We will.
Okay, when you were with the Port of Fort Townsend, mm-hmm. what were a couple of your accomplishments that you look back on fondly?
Well, I mean, it was an interesting time, you know. Think back 18, 19 years ago and what the Port of Fort Townsend was. It was a lot different, you know. They had just built the 300-ton lift. We had a rickety old 70-ton lift that was going to fall over, and you'd stand out on it and it'd actually move. So that was redone. A-B dock that you could take a screwdriver and poke through the side of the dock is now all replaced with beautiful new docks. We have a double-wide boat ramp. We have new taxiways at the airport. I mean, so when I look at all the projects that I was kind of in charge of, if you will, and there's a big difference between being in charge of a project and actually creating that project. I was just told to do it. I'm really proud of that. You know, as I go through the port right now, I was out on AB dock yesterday and go, boy, these are really beautiful docks. Well, you know, you're in the commercial basin.
I am indeed, yes.
We re-whalered the commercial basin, and that's something that's going to extend the life probably 10 years to that facility. That was another successful project.
So how about disappointments?
Disappointments. Disappointments that I didn't stay when Mr. Crockett retired. I felt that... that would have been a good transition, but I needed a change in my life at that point. And so, but really, I have no disappointments. I mean, I love my job, love the community, love the port.
Where did you come from to the Port of Port Townsend? Where did you come from, and how did you get into managing ports? Was that something you studied in college?
No, not at all. I was a commercial realtor. So I was a commercial realtor in Salem, Oregon. I love boats, and I decided one day I was going to retire. And I was 48 years old, and I said, I could retire. And so I drove up here. We had always loved Port Townsend, and we bought a little house up on Lincoln Street. It was going to be our second home. We lived in Salem, Oregon, and came up here on the weekends. And came over the hill one day, and I called Christina. Our youngest daughter had went off to school. Called Christina, and I said, that's it. We're moving. And I'm going to the wooden boat school, by the way. So we did. We came up here. I went to the wooden boat school.
You really did?
Yeah.
You've built boats, or little boats anyway.
I built boats.
I never took you for somebody that would have those kinds of skills.
Well, I don't know if that's positive or not.
It is neither. It is just something I didn't know about you.
Love that, but I realized it really wasn't me. I mean, I'm not a boat builder, but learning the skill of boat building was important. So I decided to go on the board of the wooden boat school and use my business acumen there and not necessarily building boats. And at that time, they were looking for a property manager. And, of course, I was a commercial realtor. And it's like, this is easy. I can do this. And that started the whole thing.
It ended up being a good bit more than that, though, didn't it?
It did. It did. Over the years, you know, we decided we needed a deputy director. And so I was promoted to deputy director probably in 2005, 2006. And that was it.
And why did you leave? I mean, Larry Crockett retired. I assumed that you would take one
before.
Step up.
Oh, I really? Left before.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that or remember that.
The commission at the time wanted change, and it was evident that I was not going to be that change for the commission. And I decided that, you know, there are other ports that had opportunities. I actually interviewed, and I was a finalist for the Port of Walla Walla. So I was looking to head over to Walla Walla, maybe. Great port, great opportunities.
What is the Port of Walla Walla, an airport?
It's an airport, industrial park, uh-huh. Yeah, a commercial service airport. So Christina didn't like that idea too much. She didn't want to move, and the Port of Kingston came up, and it was a perfect solution. So they needed somebody badly, and I wanted a change, so it was a good marriage.
And was it during your tenure that the Port of Kingston tried a fast ferry?
No. So that had failed long before I got there.
Good fortune for you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But, you know, I'm really excited for them on the new fast ferry coming in.
Kitsap County, yeah.
I mean, Kitsap Transit has done a great job, and, you know, that will be in port. They will be a port tenant in Kingston. We just finished $1.5 million terminal upgrade for them. So they're going to start service probably 1st of November. And that's going to be pretty exciting for Kingston.
So off to Kingston, you went to work in Port Townsend or on the outskirts of town anyway you stayed. Mm-hmm. I would imagine you were one way or the other keeping track of what was going on with the Port of Port Townsend. Were you surprised? What do you make? I don't want to talk a lot about time, but I'm just wondering what your take on what transpired might be. And again, whether it took you by surprise, it's been a tough time.
It did take me by surprise. I really didn't think that was going to happen. But it looks easy to run a port until you do it. The Port of Port Townsend especially is a very complex port in that it's not a lot of revenue. By numbers point of view, $6 million is really nothing compared to a port. But the number of facilities that have to be maintained for that $6 million are massive. You know, most ports in the $6, $7 million have one airport or one marina, and here we're managing 9 facilities. So it's very complex, and it takes someone that understands the complexity of that to run this port.
So what is your assessment of the state of the port at this point? Operating revenue, infrastructure? And I will say the culture of the port and the sense the community has of the port. How are we doing?
Well, not well. So I've noticed a shift in a couple things that I told the commissioners I want to focus on. One is we need to mend the community and the port, the community's perception of the port. Something that's near and dear to me is mending the employees of the port. The employees are always my family, were my family, and I don't like to see them hurting. And so that's important to me. And then, of course, capital projects. I'm sure Charlie and Liz are going to talk about, you know, money and all that kind of stuff, but I'm trying to do more social unification right now. So I'm meeting with the EDC, I'm meeting with City Council, I met with David Timmons, I'm meeting with the Maritime Center, really to get my arms around where everybody is and how we can work together.
So I look towards Scott Wilson in case, because now that you're on the far side of the room, I might just totally forget about you in this.
We'd hate that.
We wouldn't wish that, would we?
Let me jump in and just kind of, this is a really interesting conversation, Jim. So a couple questions. One is when you talk about healing the community or healing the relationships with the community, I'd like you also to talk about the marine trades community specifically and what is being done or needs to be done to heal that relationship. And then I also just want to ask you, what struck you as soon as you walked in the office as what was different from having when you departed 2.5 years ago? You've only been there, I think, active for about a week, if I'm not mistaken.
No,
maybe two.
It's been three.
Okay. So what struck you when you walked in the door as to what was really different from what you left?
Mm-hmm. The first is, and I probably have employees listening to me, so I apologize to the employees for this, but the biggest thing that struck me was the morale. The morale was really terrible at the time. The perception was there was no leadership, there was no direction, and it's evident in a lot of things that were happening that there was just no leadership. So that was the first thing. But it was also, it was great being welcomed back with open arms. So that was really, really nice. As far as the marine trades go, I don't know if any of you have had a chance to talk to any of the marine trades, but I've spent the last month, even a week before I started, going to their weekly meetings to find out what the issues were, what we need to do, how do we need to address those issues. You know, we instituted a new discount program for the shipyard, too, recently. This was something that the marine trades felt they needed because they could increase business if we did that. So we are working hand-in-hand with the marine trades. I think you'll find if you talk to any marine trades, they'll use the cautious optimism term just because everybody still is cautious, a little gun-shy, but we think we're going in the right direction. And I think that it's interesting. I can't say enough about Gwendolyn and Pam. They have taken an organization that was constantly fighting internally even and created an organization that is actually really teaming up and doing good for the community.
And for folks who don't know, explain who they are.
So Gwendolyn Tracy is the owner of Fine Yacht Interiors. She's a marine trade. And Pam, and you're going to – I'm sorry, Pam, I forgot your last name.
Petronic.
Petronic, thank you. Obviously is in the Cape Clear business, so she's in kind of that area of the community. But what they are more than that is organizers. They were able to really take a group of disinterested parties and bring them together to say we need to be one voice when we talk to the port. But they chose to do a different tack than a lot of people, one voice against the port. They took the tack of one voice, how do we partner with the port? And I think they've done that.
And Chris Sano, too, by the way.
Chris Sano, absolutely.
So Liz and Charlie, Liz Honig, Charlie Konieski, I will associate you quickly with the 5-point plan, which we'll reference. Both of you are public accountants, except for Liz, who isn't. Well, you do work in that realm, don't you?
I worked a little bit for our firm for few years, but my background's in municipal environmental policy and planning.
I was going to get into that, but thank you.
Yeah.
Charlie is a CPA.
Yes. Yes.
So that is the truth. I'm going to ask you, both of you, and then Jim and Scott as well, but what are, in your minds, the strengths of the Port of Port Townsend?
I think when the Marine Trades did their study that showed the economic impact I think the marine trades and how the port facilitates the huge impact to the community that the marine trades has, that's the strength. That's what it's about. We also have Moorage, we have Point Hudson, but it's the marine trades and how that is 20% of the jobs in this county and returns over five times the tax, the actual tax dollars to the community being Jefferson County, that five times the tax that's taxed on the property tax, that's the strength of the port.
So how would the port build on those strengths, or that strength?
Facilitate additional job creation and the relationships with the marine trade, with the port, to find out what the marine trades need so the port can work with those marine trades to facilitate more growth, more jobs, which means more economic impact, positive economic impact to the community.
And we are looking primarily at the waterfront now. You are, at least, the waterfront, especially the Boat Haven and the Boatyard. But there's also Point Hudson. There's also the airport. There's also the Quilcene Marina. And there's also whatever it is I'm forgetting. So there's really more than just the Boat Haven and the Boatyard, although that is what gets the most attention and probably has the largest source of revenue for the port. Liz, comment?
I was just going to say you could apply the same philosophies that Charlie just described to all the port's activities. It doesn't have to just be Boat Haven. It could really be the primary, any of the port facilities. You could take the same perspective that Charlie just described in terms of retaining jobs, building and growing jobs, and using the port resources from the citizens of Jefferson County to build an economic engine. That's the primary purpose of the port. Access to the water and access to services are also a component of that, but the main primary focus is to retain and grow the local economy.
So during some of the darkest of times, you, Liz, you, Charlie, came forward with a plan. And it, rather than simply reacting, you develop a plan that has 5 points to it. And I don't want to take much time for that because we've been over it before, but we get new listeners every minute. So if you could summarize what that presented, would you please?
I'm going to let Charlie start because the plan is still relevant and we're updating it all the time, just to let you and listeners know that this is an iterative plan for us. We've continued to update it, and we will be updating it again as part of this budget cycle, which is happening right now. But I'd like to let Charlie talk a little bit first about things that have happened, things that the port has actually accomplished that are included in our plan, which has been very positive.
So first, kind of want to give just a quick summary of why the plan. The plan was put together by Liz and myself kind of as a talking point, and here's what the port can do, because what we heard was just the world's coming to an end, the port can't afford its infrastructure, and bankruptcy is looming, and nobody knows what to do. So with our strengths, we got together and said, well, wait a minute, we don't believe that. Let's put together a plan that shows it's possible to be successful in the long term for the port to facilitate that economic engine to keep running. That's why we put our plan together. We still believe in the numbers of a plan that can work, and we believe the port can work. One thing that's interesting, and we welcome Jim as the new director, one of the big things in the plan is, for instance, it says right in our plan, keep expenses for the port in the operational budget equal to 2017 levels. That's in the new budget. That's in the 2019 budget. That's a big deal. Okay? That's one out of five. Are we satisfied? No, we're not going to be satisfied, but we're excited about that. And frankly, we're excited also that Jim's mentioned briefly that he's meeting with the marine trades. He's also met with us. He's met with all the stakeholders and the people who are interested to say, this is going to be a more transparent port. We're going to work together. We're going to be successful here. That's a complete shift from what we had before, and that's exciting. If I'm helping a little bit with the budget process, I ask for information. I can go directly to Abigail. she'll fire me off the info. I don't have to do a freedom of information request. That's all new.
You were having to do that?
Public records.
To get freedom, to get the information you wanted about the budget?
For everything.
You were?
For everything,
okay.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
And that's no longer true, and that's a significant difference in management.
Okay, how about the details of your plan beyond that?
We're still working on, based on the 2019 budget, we'd still want the port to do a five-year plan, not just a one-year plan. There were some documents in 6 months ago that were presented that said, here's the capital problems for the port. Oh, break-even year one, break-even year two, $10 million loss year three. Is that still looming? Is that out there? Is that realistic? That's why we need to do a five-year plan, hence go back to our five-step five-year plan. We want the port to do that internally with staff and present it to the commissioners and believe that's the responsibility of the staff to do it in their jobs for the community.
So, Jim, how realistic do you think this five-point plan is?
I think there are a lot of things that can be done, and I agree. You know, one of the things that Charlie said, first thing I did is cut the 19 expenses by $222,000.
What did you cut out?
Well, I did some staff reallocation.
Reallocation means some staff no longer works for the port?
That would be reallocation.
Can you say who they are, or what positions at least?
So we had a great person who was our communications and marketing person, and it was a interesting position, but the port doesn't have a big enough operation to fund a full-time marketing person. We'd be much better off using a contractor for, you know, quarter time, tenth of the time, whatever. So she has left the port, and that saved us quite a bit. But the issues that I always look at, a budget that has consultants. We all need consultants, but we all don't need 10 consultants. So we pared that budget way down. The legal activity, our legal bills were through the roof. That's going to change. So we're making sure that, you know, we can live within our legal boundaries, if you will. So I cut $30,000 out of our legal budget. And these are all realistic cuts that we can do, and they are not going to affect operations of the port at all. So that was one thing.
And you said $200,000 on a budget of $6 million, so that's substantial.
That is substantial. So we are $40,000 below our expenses in 2017 right now. I'm hoping we can keep that. You know, it's tough. We've got a lot of contracts in place, obviously. We've got union contracts and other things, and as they escalate in price, it's hard to keep cutting. I always say you can't cut yourself to prosperity. So there needs to be some look at what we can cut that doesn't affect the day-to-day operations and service levels we provide. So that's important. I think that his first step is so important, and that's clarify our mission-critical projects. You know, ports that manage all these facilities tend to use the analogy of squirrel, you know, that way, then that way. And we need to focus on what is our plan, what do we do well, and what are those critical projects that we need to do. Obviously, and I told the Maritime Center Board, and I told a couple other people, the EDC, you know, we've got three projects we really need to work on. We need to redo our runway. We need to do that right now because we don't know if FAA funds are going to be available next year or the year after. They've offered us $4.4 million to redo it. We're going to do it.
And how much will have to come from the port?
So there is a match of $200,000. However, we are applying for a grant this week that will possibly allow us, because we are a rural distress county, to get that match waived. So it's not for sure, but I'm trying like heck to get that $200,000 waived from the FAA. We have to do something with the breakwater at Point Hudson. I made a promise to quite a few people that that breakwater is not going to go down on my watch. We are going to figure out a fix for that thing. So that is in my radar. And, of course, stormwater for the marine trades. We've been putting Band-Aids on that for years. We had a plan 5 years ago to do infiltration, And I've resurrected that plan to do to figure out how we can do infiltration and not have a direct outfall into the bay. It's the only way we're going to comply with ecology and only way we're going to continue to grow our boatyard. So those are the three things that are in my sites that really support critical mission that the port has to do.
I think that's consistent with what Charlie and Liz brought, and that is the matter of setting priorities and not trying to fix everything at once.
Right.
With respect to the breakwater first, how are you going to do that? So effort was made this year, indeed the effort was made this year, and then ran into a couple of conflicts. Mostly the funds were not available.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to take partnerships. So one of the things David Timmons and I talked about, until the city, the county, the Maritime Center, and the port get together, we will not be successful in Olympia. But if we are together and we go to Olympia, I believe the state will help us. So that's one. Together, you know, singing the same song, kumbaya around the campfire, holding hands, that this is a project that needs to happen.
Would that be from the legislature or from an agency?
Legislature.
Uh-huh.
So
a term, rather the session comes up shortly.
I mean, we've talked to Kevin Vandeweg. We've talked to Mike Chapman. We've talked to people about this. They seem to think that we should move this forward, this initiative. But they don't want to talk to us if it's the port against the city, against the county. And so we need to overcome those differences. But, you know, talking to people is always great because I was talking to a gentleman the other day that says, you know, have you thought about declaring the breakwater part of the National Historic Landmark District? Because the breakwater is historic. It's been there since 1934. Hadn't thought of that. So we are actually pursuing getting the NHL out here to see if they would register the breakwater as a historic structure.
And then they will say, don't replace it.
Well, no. They will say, don't replace it with a monolithic steel structure. Replace it with riprap that will allow us to keep the character of Port Townsend. Right now, if I go to the Corps of Engineers and say, I want to rebuild a rubble mound breakwater, they're going to say, can't do it. Isn't going to happen. But if it's a National Historic Register, now it's a repair of a historic structure. So I'm pursuing that. I think that's a great option. And Robert Darcy, I don't know if you all know Robert from the Martha, he came up with this idea. He says, you know, Martha's on the historic register and they've done so much for us. Why don't you think of this? So that's why this tour around, spending time with people, listening to ideas, and then coming up with these ideas, and maybe they'll work. So that's why I'm going to try to do it. We've estimated that a rubble mound repair would be about $3.5 million versus a $5 million, so we could save some money.
And you wouldn't have to worry about importing the rubble from China, would you?
No.
As opposed to the steel.
But we still need steel piles.
Okay.
We'd have to remove the creosote piles and put steel piles in, and then it would be caged. It would be a caged rubble mound, so they'd be, you know, stainless steel cage. But a lot of the rocks that have fallen out of the breakwater could be replaced.
Reused?
Yeah.
Really?
So
it's a novel idea.
We'll see.
Novel ideas.
I like roads to go down like this and investigate.
So to the marine trades. Let me see here. Marine trades, I don't know, a draft lease policy that has been in the news. I think it's still a draft, correct? And in that policy, there's a phrase that has gotten a lot of attention. And as far as I know, it's all been negative attention. And that is the phrase we often see in real estate, as you would have when you worked in real estate, highest and best use.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask first Liz and Charlie if that's an appropriate concept for a lease policy for the marine trades for a public entity like the Port of Port Townsend.
Well, we are perspective on that phrase, and that in a policy document is that there are typically policy documents you try to make clear so that those people who are implementing the policies have a really clear understanding of what the words mean. And that term has so many different definitions and can be interpreted so many different ways and clearly already has been and is so controversial. To us, it doesn't seem worth having it in a policy statement. There's no reason. There's no good reason to have it in there. We'd like to see a policy that is clearer, simpler, more to the point of what we're trying to accomplish here at the Port of Port Townsend. We'd also like to see a staff report attached to the lease policy so that we know who wrote it. Because right now we have a lease policy that was drafted by we don't know who. We don't have any documentation going along with that lease policy that says this is why we're proposing a consumer price index plus 1% raise in the lease prices every year, which we also don't agree with. Here's why we're saying this should be in the lease policy. Something that says, here's why we're proposing this lease policy. Here are the advantages and disadvantages to this, so that we as a community and the advisory committee can really evaluate and understand who drafted it, why they drafted it, and what it's going to accomplish for our port.
So instead of highest and best use, what phrase or term would you prefer?
We would take it out.
Just take it out, period.
Take it out. It's not necessary.
What value or values drives the policy?
Well, what values drive the policy is how leases are managed. So how is a lease managed for a public port or any entity? How is a lease managed? It's land managed like by market rates. It's managed. So there are simple concepts around how do you lease? How do you lease a property to somebody? There's no, if it's based on fair market values and a market-based approach to leasing, then highest and best use doesn't have to be stated in the policy. It can be discussed. The words highest and best use don't need to be in there. We think they're inflammatory. We don't think that they add anything to the policy, and maybe Charlie can talk a little bit more.
There have been flames.
He can talk a bit more about it from a commercial lease perspective, because we have commercial leases. Charlie advises people on commercial leases.
I have a lot of experience advising people on their leases for the businesses, because that's what we do for a living, is advise business owners. So we're working from the side of the property owners, because we have literally hundreds of clients that own property, commercial properties, and lease them, as well as from the tenant side, from the businesses who are tenants of those leases. And like Liz said, you do a market rate, and you do it based on the condition of the property, you know, what the pluses and minuses are. In this case, if it's marine trades, access to the water or not, condition of the building, length of the lease, all those things. You don't need that language, highest and best use, in there. And also, remember what we're trying to do, we talked about earlier just today, is we're trying to facilitate the success of the marine trades. We're not trying to make as much money for the port as we can. We don't want the port to go bust, don't get me wrong, but what we're trying to do is facilitate the economics for the community. So highest and best use is language that's inflammatory and doesn't help anybody any.
Jim, what do you think about all this? And I know you didn't write that.
Right. Well, we had this discussion during the first meeting of the policy, and we have a group of five people that are actually really great. We've got a couple of marine trades, we've got a banker, we've got a real estate person. It's a good group that are really engaged.
It's an advisory group for
the commissioners.
Exactly.
Right. You know, as a realtor, highest and best use, it just comes off your tongue because that's what you say. But I 100% agree with you. It doesn't need to. It is inflammatory in the present situation. Well, the perspective I offered the group was, one of the things to think about is highest and best use as it relates to the zoning. So it's zoned marine trades. It's an industrial site. It's not zoned for condominiums. It's not zoned for anything. But so I asked one of the marine trades that sits on the committee, you own a piece of waterfront property, and I said, if you left that piece of property and a restaurant wanted to come in there, obviously restaurants are allowed in the port, would that be the highest and best use of your property? And of course he said, no, it wouldn't be. So I agree with that too. But that's what we were trying to get at. In the appropriate zone, what's the best use? For instance, love Carol Hussey. She's a friend of mine. She's a sailmaker. She doesn't have to be on the water. She could be farther back in the boatyard. There are people that have to be right next to the water for access to the water. So that could be determined as highest and best use. Breweries we allow. Coffee roasters we allow. Should they be allowed on the waterfront? Probably not. But I'll tell you what we thought about. And actually, Ernie Baird and who else was the other? I guess it was Mark Byrne, who was sitting in the audience at the time, came up with, why don't we just do a map of Boathaven and say this is all marine trades, and then do little lots that are in yellow that says, in these lots, we'll allow a brewery, we'll allow a coffee roaster, we'll allow a restaurant, but everything else has to be full marine trades. And the committee kind of liked that concept. Instead of using a word like that, actually use a graphic. Here's the Boathaven, and this is what you can do there, and then that's part of the policy that when I'm dead and gone, the leasing agent can say, I can only put a marine trade here. So it's a way to go. That's why I think this committee's great. They're very engaged. I'm looking forward to going forward. This is really Eric Taves's. Eric's been off in England for the last 4 weeks, and he is coming back next Wednesday, and this is his deal. And so we'll expect to have a couple more meetings as soon as he gets back.
His word processor.
Yeah.
Scott.
So, Jim, just to kind of keep talking about that theme but in a slightly different context, so where do you think we're going to go, or where do you think the port is going to go in terms of commercial leases for the people who are at the Boathaven or at Point Hudson?
As far as what?
Well, I mean, there's under the previous administration, there was talk of substantial raises up to 100% increase or even more. So where do you think that's going to go?
So I've been hiring a company for the last 18 years called Charette, or his name is Peter Charette. He's with Kidder Matthews. The port, after a lot of meetings, contentious meetings, decided to hire Peter to come back. He has a set of appraised values, which are really only about 3 or 4% higher than they were 5 years ago. So we're not seeing a big shift there. And the commission has that documentation. And if I were a betting guy, I think that's the model we're going to follow, where every 2 years we're going to have somebody like Kidder Matthews come in, not necessarily only Kidder Matthews, but a commercial real estate agent to come in, appraise the properties, and go that way. But I expect you are going to see CPI increases only. Maybe small jumps, but not much.
So that jump on that is I think that's a great idea, and I was all for the Kidder Matthews study. We pushed really hard to get the port to go back and do the study, as was a policy from 2001. It hadn't been done since 2006. So we're excited that there was a study. But here's the interesting thing is the study shows comparable market values, comparable market values. So if somebody has a space that's fits these qualifications, it rents for 60 cents a square foot. In the lease policy, still is a consumer price index plus 1%, that leases are allowed to be written with CPI plus 1. Now think about that over a 10-year period. Now you've got CPI plus 10. That's not market anymore. You're getting way off of market. If we're doing and do a study for market values, then why don't we stick with market values? We actually have the same problem in the mortgage. And the mortgage policy right now is CPI every year plus 1%. We did a comparison. In 10 years, we'll be 10% higher, if we follow that model, 10% higher than anybody in Puget Sound. Is that really what we want to do in our community? Is that really what we want to subject our business marine trade tenants to? I think not.
And
I
we also
that needs to be corrected.
One of our suggestions about the budgeting process and the rate setting process is that we as a port really start looking carefully at these revenues. So I think what's happened with this plus 1% is the idea of we need more money. Let's add 1%. People won't get too upset about that. So let's just add that on. There's not really any more justification than that. So they added that on, but they didn't look at two or three things. One is they didn't look at how much revenue are they going to get from 1%, And from the tenant.
Not much, I suppose.
Probably not much. The other thing is, what are the impacts on tenants, commercial ones in particular? Let's say that 1% generates $15,000 of revenue. Let's just say. But let's say you have seven tenants who have to bear the burden of that $15,000. Let's just say. Then you get a small revenue increase, but you have a huge burden on your tenants. So that plus 1% is one thing that really has bothered us, and we feel there needs to be a more of a policy level discussion on why. Why?
And Jim, 25 words or fewer on the 1%, because I want to move on to Point Hudson. But why this 1%? Is that standard operating procedure for real estate leases?
No. So again, I just want to clarify to the listeners, that wasn't my position.
I know you did not write this.
And that lease that you have does not have a 1% addition. That is just CPI. So I pulled the 1% out of mortgage and leases. So that is only CPI. You're absolutely right. The 1% plus 1 is a revenue generation type tactic. I mean, if nothing else, we need money, so let's ask 1%. So I took it to the commission last meeting, and I said, okay, 1% is going to generate $27,000. And Commissioner Hanke says, we're going to lose $30,000 worth of public relations for $27,000. I want to get rid of it. Now, it wasn't decided in the commission meeting, and it will be talked about Wednesday. But my budget that I have put forward does not include the 1% CPI only.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So,
clarification.
To Point Hudson, I have read in Scott Wilson's former newspaper that the port is back to talking with the Maritime Center. I'm wondering what those conversations, what form they're taking, what the likelihood of success, and success would be an arrangement with the Maritime Center. How's that going? And what would you hope for that conversation?
So of my list of 20 friends in Port Townsend, I think maybe have 20 left, Jake Beatty is one of them. And Jake and I have kept in touch all through this process. We've had dinner, we've had lunch. So Jake and I have gotten together. We're talking. I don't know how much farther that's going to go. The great thing is Jake and I can be brutally honest with each other and say, this doesn't work, this might work. And that's important. So I've told Jake that I'd be willing to talk to his executive board if they want to talk to me, that we can sit down and look at see if it's going to work or not. I think that the Maritime Center is on a fast track, and I think that my commission is not on a fast track to make a decision. So I'm hoping that those two things don't collide. They seem to think that they need to make a decision sooner than later, and I just don't see us making a decision in the next 2 months on this. There's a lot of discussion. When you look at the budget for 2019, if you take out A&G and you look at what we're projecting...
A&G, I don't know what that is.
It's administration in general. It's a category that includes a bunch of stuff. And one of the things I'm doing in the budget is I'm trying to do a budget in plain English. So we're doing narrative. And the narrative is going to talk about what A&G is. So the people reading the budget won't have to ask that question. But it includes $270,000 we pay in insurance premiums. You know, those things, my salary, because I'm not working at a specific job, the executive staff gets kind of put. The commission salaries, that goes in A&G. A&G is about $1 million, so the $6 million budget, and it gets separated among the cost centers by revenue, so depending on what revenue. But if you look at that, and you have to look at that, because if we lease Point Hudson to the Maritime Center, that A&G doesn't go away. We're still going to have to insure it. I'm still going to be here. I mean, we might lose an employee, but it's going to be hard to recoup that money. So people tend to only look at the bottom line. Well, Jim, you're only making $175,000 at Point Hudson, and we're going to pay you $250,000 a year. Well, yeah, but... So those are the things that Jake and I need to go together on, figure out what we can do. And then we made a pact the other day that we are going to continue the discussion, and together, Jake and I, when we feel confident, are going to go to our respective boards together and say, this is what we think would work.
How often do you meet?
See, we've been meeting every week.
Can I ask a follow-up, Phil? So in these new discussions you're having with Jake, I mean, one of the concerns about the Maritime Center's proposal had to do with shifting a public entity to a private, I mean, a beloved but still private entity that wouldn't have open meeting requirements and that sort of thing. So my question is, have you guys discussed some sort of a public development authority type option that would still allow at least a quasi-public structure for Point Hudson?
We did, but we haven't come to any conclusions, and that's really a policy level at a board and commission level. But I agree with you, there's going to be need to be oversight. I mean, my first question to Jake is, this is great, Jake, but what happens when Jim and Jake are gone? You know, 10 years from now when there's no Jake and he's somewhere else, is this still going to make sense? So we need to think through that and how that would be run and what kind of oversight would be there. So, but we're in the beginning stages. But I like.
You say the Maritime Center wants to move more quickly than the port. Can you help them put on the brakes?
Don't know. That's why I asked Jake if it would be helpful if I met with his executive board. And he said it would, and he'll set that up. I don't have a date on that yet. But
I was thinking to invite Jake today, but as you can see, the room is full.
Yeah.
And so I did not do that.
I just want to make a point on that. It's Charlie. That one of the problems with the negotiations for Point Hudson with the Maritime Center is there were three sets of numbers being used for different purposes, and I think that caused a lot of problems, and I think it'd be it'd serve everybody to use one set of numbers to compare what would happen previous to, or you know, currently with Port managing Point Hudson, and what could happen if the Maritime Center managed it. So there were three sets of numbers. There's a set of numbers used by the consultants under the grant at Point Hudson. There's a set of numbers that are given out internally from the port that said, here's our Point Hudson division numbers. And then there's a third set of numbers that were used from Redfern Consultants. And all three of those numbers were used for different purposes. And it seems to me they were used for purposes that serve those numbers rather than to really have some real numbers and evaluate it using real numbers. I think that's going to be important. It'll be really important for the community to know that this is done using real historical numbers. Here's not a what if, you know, the sun shines twice today. Here's what really happened last year, and here's what we can do with those numbers.
And Jim, have you been told, because I have not been told, I don't really know, though I think I have some notions, I do have notions, why the negotiations fell apart the first time?
I think from a lot of people's perspective, there was a lot on the past administration's plate. The Maritime Center threw out a, here's our first offer, and that just fell on deaf ears. And negotiations is about negotiations. You need to keep talking. You need to keep working through things. There wasn't that negotiations, I think. I know that Commissioner Tucker really helped, tried to go in and talk to Jake and try to get the Maritime Center's perspective. But I'm not sure that our administrator really spent a lot of time on this.
So in recent years, the conflict, there has been conflict in the port. It's been around the marine trades, around leases. During the time, and I think much of the time, that you were on the port staff, the conflict was between the port and mortgage tenants. Mm-hmm. And now the tenants' union seems to be, like the Marine Trades Association, somewhat revitalized. Mm-hmm. How will you make peace with this organization? Because there wasn't peace before, and some of the history will likely persist unless we make it not persist.
Right. So Jeff Kelty, is the new Bertram, and we've met four times now, and we'll continue to talk because I think that's important. It's hard to lump those two into the same category.
You mean Bertram and Jeff?
No, not at all. Not at all. Marine trades and mortgage tenants. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're different functions. And although everybody that seems to think that the port needs to treat recreational mortgage tenants the same way we do bona fide businesses creating jobs, it's a different situation. And one of the things that's starting to inflame right now is we're giving marine trade discounts for haulouts. And, of course, the mortgage tenants want discounts now. And it's like, well, wait a minute, we're not talking the same thing here. So we need to listen to them. We need to really look at market for recreational mortgage. And it really it was great. Bertram sent me an email last month. And he picked the marinas he feel we compete with. And he put the rates, and right now we are the highest marina of those five marinas. So it's Port Angeles, Squim, Port Ludlow, Hadlock, PT.
That's a fair comparison.
Yeah, it's fine. And his numbers were right on, exactly where we were. But the market's changing. As we all have read in the newspapers, Port Angeles is struggling. They don't know they want to sell John Wayne Marina. They have no money to repair it. They're looking at raising rates CPI plus 6. So all of a sudden, Port Townsend is not the highest anymore. Port Ludlow now is dealing with the DNR lease. DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, saying your marina's on our property, so you're going to have to pay a surcharge.
That never has happened?
Well, no, not yet, but it's happening this year.
How could that have been omitted all these years? You don't know that, of course. That's amazing.
So anyway, there's going to be a surcharge now on mortgage in Port Ludlow, so that's going to go up considerably. Bob Wise at Hadlock has always tried to do 1 cent, 2 cents below us. I think he's looking with his new marina expansion and repair. That's going to change. So we could find ourselves of those five marinas being the lowest price of those five. So what I told the commissioners, let's take a wait-and-see attitude. Let's not do CPI plus one. Let's not look at any other increases. We're just going to put CPI in the budget, and that's what we're going to go on, and reminded them that they can raise rates at any time. So if 6 months from now they say, you know, we're the lowest and there is, then we come to Phil and say, Phil, we want to be on your radio show and explain why we need a rate increase.
I'll invite Bertram to come back, too.
I'm sure he will be.
So you say you plan to be on the job 12 months, and maybe it'll stretch a little bit if you find yourself in the middle of something, but you don't intend to have this be open-ended in time. How will you, that's what I read in Scott Wilson's former newspaper, mm-hmm. your words, I think. Is that true?
That's true.
Okay. So 12 months come, 12 months go. How will you evaluate whether your 12 months have been successful?
Well, I think we need to make progress on those three projects that I talked about. I'm not going to finish the breakwater in 12 months, but I want to know that we have the money, we've got the permits, and we can move forward. I want to know that the airport project is done without a hiccup, and we stay on budget and on time. And I want to know that the stormwater design for infiltration is done. Now, whether it gets funded or not is a whole other story, but I want the commissioners to have the idea that there is an option to stormwater, and this is how you do it.
And how about the relationships you talked about when you started?
Well, obviously, they need to be improved in all categories. The thing that worries me the most is selecting a director that gets this community.
And what does that mean? I know in general what that means.
There are a lot of port directors out there that don't understand Port Townsend and wouldn't put up with Port Townsend. We are a different community.
So what is it about this community that somebody would be maybe challenged to understand and would need to understand?
So we're a traditional community. We value tradition. We value historic nature. We value our marine trades. There is no other port in the state that has a marine trades like we do. There is no other port in the state that runs three recreational marinas. There is no marina in the state that has historic buildings in a former immigration station. So we are so unique. If we take a director from even Anacortes and bring him here, he won't fit. So finding that person is going to be a challenge. You know, my link into this community really was the boat school. I mean, the boat school taught me this community. And so I can understand it, and I know how to deal with a lot of the issues, where finding that person is going to be tough. I mean, everybody loved Sam when they hired her. She's going to be great. And she didn't understand the marine culture we have here.
Okay, Liz, comments on all that?
I feel positive. I just feel very positive about Jim's leadership and the direction he's taking the port right now. And Charlie and I plan to stay engaged, and we look forward to budget. budget. Sure. I know people probably laugh, and I said we look forward to the budget. We look forward to being involved in the budget process.
Charlie, you're leaning back.
The five-year budget process is what we look forward to. Starting to look out a few years on some of these big projects and operations to see what it can be, so everybody doesn't have the idea that, you know, there's a train wreck coming up.
Scott Wilson.
Well, speaking of that, then I want to close with a question, Jim, and it is that. I mean, for the past 2.5 years, the message we've heard is that it's a fiscal mess, it's a possible bankruptcy. What you've talked about with us today involves holding the line on a lot of revenue streams, you know, no big increases, yes, indeed, some expense cutting. But is that, you know, is that enough? What do you see? What's your forecast fiscally?
There's only one way we can do this, and that's with partnerships. I can't raise rates high enough to solve all of our infrastructure problems. That just won't happen. So unless we engage and partner with other people, we won't be successful.
And if we had more time, I would ask about your conversations with David Timmons. We'll save that for the next time. Jim, good to see you again.
Great. Good to see you.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while, but we were on a committee together, too.
Remember that? Yeah, we were.
We got along well. Liz Honey, good to see you. Charlie Konieski, very same. Scott, Master Mariner. Oh, you may need a shave, Scott. What is going on with you?
He's a boat owner now.
In my final second, there is the last home football game for Townsend High School is tonight at 6 p.m.
Okay, Scott. Go Cowboys. No, that's Red Hawks. Excuse me. All right. I must ask you all now to open the door and take off.